Speaking of imparting knowledge to others who are not here, I am recording the audio of this presentation. The audio of the previous presentation is already up on the website, and this one is going to be a little bit different, so this one is going to go up on the website as well. So you can download and listen to it and have your friends download and listen to it at your desire. StephenHarris.net, StephenHarris.net. What I'm going to talk about tonight is not a 101 for preparedness. I'm not going to cover food, water, specifically in detail, home preparedness, home storage, energy. Those are things that I would guess that most of you already have in abundance and already done and completed. So this seminar is going to be based upon you having that stuff already, because some of that stuff is a solution to the issues that we're going to be talking about here. I'm going to cover basically a general familiarization of weapons of mass destruction and how they get to you and hurt you. I'm not going to make you memorize a whole bunch of things. You're not going to have to really take notes on what is sarin, what is VX, what is Tobin, what is Lewisite, what is botulism toxin. You're not going to have to really memorize or write down any information. I'm going to talk to you in regards to principles of these items and how they harm you and how you can stay safe. I'm also going to cover the SARS pneumonia, because that's very how it gets to you and affects you is very similar to the way biological weapons do. So once you leave here tonight, you'll understand the mechanisms and the methods of infection as well as protection. There are some, despite what you hear on the news and what people talk about, there are some very horrible things out there. There are diseases in existence right now in laboratories, weaponized, ready to go by whomever so desires to actually unleash this. There are things out there that can challenge humanity as we know it on the face of the planet. It is possible to use, for example, some of the weaponized versions of smallpox that are lethality enhanced, that are virulence enhanced, and it could kill 100 million Americans in as little as 2 to 3 months. That's 100 million. It's beyond your comprehension of the scale of death that we're talking about. It is possible. It can be done. This is a threat that we are preparing against. They come out and they say, well, smallpox is 30% lethal. It's 30% lethal to a smallpox-exposed population. We're all smallpox-naive, let alone the modifications that have been done to it that can be done by college-level geneticists in order to make it near 100% lethal. So the stuff we're going to talk about is definitely very, very serious. And just, you know, how much respect you generally have for the intellectual problems of the media in general. Not much. Now, if you don't take the word on half the stuff they say, don't take the word, especially on half the stuff they're saying in regards to civil defense, weapons of mass destruction, let alone your safety. Your safety is up to you. It's underneath your responsibility to become educated and prepared to protect yourself, your family, your loved ones, your neighbors, your family, your community. Weapons of mass destruction, both chemical weapons and biological. Some of these are very easy to make. You listen to the news. Well, they're hard to make. No, they're very easy. You can make anthrax on your kitchen table with a hot plate. You can even go out into the wild and find a variety of anthrax that is lethal enough to do some really good damage. The Yamshin Riko cult in Japan did this, and they even exposed some of our people in our bases to anthrax. Unfortunately, they grabbed a version that wasn't too lethal, and it didn't have too much of an effect. But you can go find it, you can grow it, you can begin to make a crude weaponization of it. You can go make a chemical weapon right now with stuff that you can find within a 20-mile radius of where we are that is going to be almost as lethal as the most toxic nerve gas, in quotes, okay? And it can kill a lot of people. Now, the hard thing is doing it right, okay? When they say it's hard to do this stuff, it means it's hard to do it on a military weaponization scale. You can make anthrax, true. You can grow it, true. You're going to have a hard time making the 1 to 3 micron anthrax that is needed for deep respiratory seeding of the number of particles and to put a drying agent with it so it doesn't stick with each other and then to disseminate it as a very fine powder. That's hard, okay? That, if you do that right, you can take 200 pounds of anthrax, fly over Washington, D.C. in the right climate condition, the right time of the day, with the right winds, with the right dispersal agent, and you can kill 2 million people with 200 pounds. Okay? If you do it poorly, which you can do poorly very easily with a leaf blower, you're not going to get 2 million. You're going to get 20,000, 2,000. So when I say it's hard to do it, that means hard to do it on that scale of a Soviet Union dispersion, okay, of a North Korea dispersion, of a United States weaponization. That's hard to do. A chemical weapon, same thing, easy to make. We can go get two chemicals, and we can make a chemical weapon that will kill you in a matter of 30 seconds. Just the smallest drop. I mean, smallest drop, okay? Something that fits between the pillars of the building on the back of the penny will kill you. Dispersal. Well, special nozzles, special dispersal systems, a lot of science, right climatic conditions to do it right. A pressure washer and a Cessna will do it poorly, but it'll still do it. So it is a real threat. The question is, how big is the threat? And are you unlucky enough to be where it's poorly dispersed? So it can be done. Okay, it's just a question of what order of magnitude. If you're really good, you can kill millions. If you're a bad terrorist, and thank God they have been pretty stupid, except for a couple of instances, they're going to have a hard time doing it effectively. But yet, nevertheless, they can do it, and it'll cause hoopla. Look what one guy did with a dollar twenty worth of postage in 5 envelopes. Okay, he paralyzed our postal system and put the nation into fear. That was a very good form of anthrax, poorly implemented. If he dispersed it with a leaf blower over New York City, you know, he would have gotten a lot more. So the threat is real. We've just become numb to it. Don't get numb to it. You know, this is a serious concern. People are more serious concerned about thunderstorms or ice storms coming through and knocking the power out. The threat against us is as real as that. So don't take it lightly. I am going to talk to you about here principles. Everyone was asking me about, well, am I going to hand something out? No, I'm not handing anything out. I don't have anything for you to take home. So I'm going to be between here. They're asking me for paper. I don't have paper. I don't have notes, stuff for you to take. I want to present everything to you here in a way such that you're going to walk out with the knowledge between your ears. Preparedness, being prepared, being able to cope with any situation is not the stuff that you have. Okay? It is not stuff that keeps you safe. It is not this nice little flashlight that has a blinky strobe on it and this little light on it. This does not keep you safe at all. This is a thing, okay? It is your knowledge of how to use the things around you and how to get things that you need to adapt to a situation and how to use the things you have effectively. That's preparedness. That's what keeps you safe. If you think this keeps you safe and you don't have this on you when something happens, and something happens, you feel helpless. You know, and many people die. This happens to people who go off into the mountains, into the cold weather. They lose all their stuff. They find themselves just wearing their clothes after an avalanche and all their gear's gone. They give up. They don't know what to do. I don't have my stove. I don't have my ski poles. I don't have my snowshoes. So I want you to walk away from here with understandings of how some of these things work. So if you're here, if you're in San Francisco, Los Angeles, something happens, you'll understand the mechanisms and how to find the resources that you need to protect yourself. Okay, we're going to go in a little bit into biological and chemical weapons and how they work. And I'm going to illustrate a principle. It's a crude principle, but I guarantee you, you'll never forget it. Biological weapons and diseases, SARS, pneumonia, the common cold, the flu, anthrax, smallpox, okay? These weapons, even though they might be called a gas, they do not float through the room on the air like a fart. They do not disseminate slowly like this, okay? They are a physical particle like this hat. Yeah, so you're supposed, I was supposed to throw that better. It is a physical particle like this hat. Okay, this is what I want you to walk away from. You're not after something invisible. You know what a germ is. If I picked you up and I put you back in the Civil War, before the bacteria was really discovered and known, even though you didn't have a shred of 21st century medicine, you'd be at an advantage more than many of the doctors then. Because you at least understand what a germ and what bacteria and a virus is. If you got cut, or if the Civil War doctor had to sew you up, you'd say, boil your needles, your suture, and your stuff. Boil it. Why? Well, there's bacteria on there. What do you mean? I can't see it. Well, still, you know what a bacteria is. You understand the mechanism. You understand the principle. If you understand the principle of what a bacteria is, you can stop your cut from getting infected in 1865. If you understand that the bioweapons coming after you are like this hat, you can stop that hat, okay? So, how does this hat infect you? This hat is a bad bacteria, bad virus, okay? How does this hat hurt you? How does it infect you? What are the routes into the body for infection? The doctor's wife can't tell me. I mean, it's no fair. She can't participate. Vic, what are the routes? No. A cut on the skin. The skin is a wonderful barrier to most everything biological, okay? It's a wonderful barrier to the cold, to viruses, to bacteria. You have a cut in your skin, an open wound. That's one route of infection. What's another route?
Yeah, breathing in mouth.
Mouth, nose.
Your eyes?
Eyes. Very key route right here is through your eyes. Any open mucous membrane. So eyes, nose, mouth, and there's two more or one more depending upon your sex. Okay? Those are routes for infection into the body. We're going to worry about these three plus a cut. Okay?
What about the ears?
No. Not a primary route. If I pick up something in my hand, I go like this, and I don't have a sore there or a cut, it's not a primary route of infection. If you sneeze on something or on me or breathe or talk on me long enough, you're aspirating saliva to a distance of about 6 feet. It's micro droplets, okay? I am aspirating all of you in the front rows right now with saliva. And it is on the air and floating around. You can't stop it. It happens, okay? And if one of your viruses is on the surface and you pick it, and you touch it, and you go like this. This is a very good route of infection. This is how I catch my colds, probably, is I go like this, okay? I rub my eyes. So, if we're going to talk about one of the current issues of pneumonia, now let's say it's a lot worse than it is right now, okay? We have a lot higher infection rate. And you actually have to go to the grocery store. Because you have to go get some extra things. You have to go out into the public, or you have to fly home on an airliner. What did we just say the routes of infection were? So if you walk onto the airplane with this, is this going to protect me perfectly? You think there's ways around it? Few, small. What's this going to do? You know, my gloves, my goggles, and my mask.
So I'm going to keep some to keep
ordering. Either that or they'll want to sit real close to me, one of the two. What I'm doing is, this doesn't make a perfect seal, it makes a darn good seal against you. And this protects your eyes very well. In fact, these are chemical splash goggles, and they don't have the myriad of holes up here, they just have a couple of them. So if I have a chemical splash all over my face, it has a harder time going into my eyes because of the smaller holes. These are $4, the cheaper ones are
$2.
Chemical splash goggles I got at the hardware store for $4.29, and the face masks I got at Benson's, and they're out of stock. Those are called fluid resistant face masks. Yeah. Now, what did I do? Is I decreased severely my exposure of my sensitive areas of my body to whatever is coming to me. Is it micro droplets of saliva containing a virus being aspirated by someone's sneeze, cough, or speaking, going through an airplane and coming into my eyes? I've obviously reduced that route a great deal with the goggles. I'm wearing a face mask, so if I'm infected, I'm not aspirating my saliva onto someone else. And if I'm inhaling, I'm not going to be inhaling a great deal of particles, if any, into my mucous membranes, let alone letting it get deep seated into my lungs. Okay? So this is just a barrier that you're putting in the way of a hat flying through the air coming towards you. My hands, my gloves, what are these doing? Well, if I'm talking, I'm aspirating this table with microdroplets of saliva that can be containing the SARS virus or any other contagious virus or bacteria. And if I'm touching this and everything else, these are reminding me not to do this, okay? The gloves are reminding me not to do this, but the gloves allow me, when I'm done with an area or something, to take the gloves off and to dispose of the potential contamination, okay? So you don't want the hat flying into your eyes, into your nose, into your mouth, and into open or exposed cuts, okay? We'll get to safe rooms, duct tape, and plastic, and this is going to be the same concept. Question?
Yeah, if you throw it both away, you throw the mask in and it out with the way too much time, or do you clean them?
Clean them. The masks are disposable. Those are semi-disposable. You can clean them, right? Throw them into your oven for 150 degrees for half hour, and you should kill most anything on the mask. This, wash it in hot soapy water.
Antibacterial soap?
Almost any soap. But yeah, if you have antibacterial, sure.
There's an antibacterial soap really didn't do what it's supposed to do.
Soap has basic principles that kill most bacteria and viruses. Question?
You don't see people in Hong Kong wearing goggles. You see them all over with the mask, but...
Pretty stupid.
It's interesting.
Okay, yeah. I mean... Does it not make sense, okay?
It does.
The eyes are a direct route for infection into your body. So is your nose and your mouth. Now, you're going to inhale the particles and infect your cells. If I'm 6 feet from you and talking and happy about talking to you and aspirating a little bit more and you get it up in here, or you get it here and you touch and push it up in there, it's a direct infection route. If I was in Hong Kong, I would be wearing goggles. Dr. Mayo, doctors in surgery working on a patient with HIV or some other unknown or hepatitis, they're wearing face shields. When you go to see your dentist, is your dentist wearing a face shield?
You mean a face shield goggles?
Yeah. Well, they're wearing even better face shields. They're wearing a face shield that, there's face shields that are combined with a face mask and they go up like this. Okay? So there is no direct splash route. So, eyes, nose, mouth, cuts.
Can you put your regular glasses help?
Help, absolutely. Help. Okay, it's just a lower level of protection. But yes, it helps, okay?
What about the real mask? I mean, the gas mask. Do you think
that's that? No, I'm not going to get into full gas masks because most of you don't have them. Most of you would have a hard time getting them. Most of you wouldn't be able to wear them for a long enough period of time. So I'm not really talking about things that will protect you. Obviously, if you understand the routes of infection to the body and how things go through the air and through liquids and get to you, you understand whether or not the mask, the goggles, the face mask, or a room full of plastic or a hermetically sealed cocoon around you will protect you. Okay? You're going to walk away from the class with the knowledge of deciding on your own whether or not that will protect you. Okay? Okay, that's a little bit on protection. We're going to come into that. Now we're going to go into the actual mechanisms. What's out there as far as chemical weapons and biological toxins, and how do they get you? Okay. Orally is one way to get things into you that will make your life a challenge, okay? We're going to talk about the oral routes principally and right now of just what we're going to call poisoning, okay? Think of it as if you're swallowing hemlock or something else that was highly toxic to you. Some of these examples would be salmonella, botulism toxin, cyanide. Okay? Salmonella was sprinkled on salad bars by a small terrorist organization. I think it was actually 20 years ago up in the Oregon area. And people went and ate from salad bars, and they took the toxin into them and became very aggressively sick. Okay? Botulism toxin. It's one of the most toxic substances known on the face of the earth. You don't need to memorize that, you know, botox is highly toxic. It's, I'm talking to you about the route through the bot that gets into you. If you had a quantity of this or cyanide and you put it into the food supply, either at a grocery store, at a manufacturing facility, or some other place upstream of where you're going to get it, you are going to be taking this in through your oral route, and you are going to be severely challenged. Okay? Now, if someone poisoned, say someone poisoned the carbon dioxide that goes through all the soda fountains, okay? So it doesn't matter what you got, Pepsi, Coke, root beer, doesn't matter. CO2 tanks were carrying a poison into them. And people started ingesting this, and it started affecting people 6 hours after they took it, okay? Ricin would be another good candidate for this. How are you going to detect that there's a poisoning? How are you going to know as a public? A lot of people going to the emergency, a lot of people falling over and incapacitated or dying, okay? That's how you are going to detect it. That's your only route. There's no special sensors by the government monitoring all this, okay? We're going to depend upon canaries, other people, unfortunately, to tell us. Now, if the, you do see this, okay? You're watching the TV and CNN is showing 1,000 people, you know, being taken to the hospitals on gurneys, dead. And it says, well, looks like it was a poisoning at something or another. You know, they're trying to identify what food source they ate. What are you going to do? How do you protect yourself against it? Stop eating what?
Go to your food store.
Stop eating the unknowns that you know that can, are questionable, and start eating what you do know is safe. So if you have food storage, and we all have a year of food storage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have three man years of food storage, okay? Three years for one person divided by how many people I have. So you go to your own food storage, and you know it's going to be safe, okay? You know you can avoid this problem of poisoning that's affecting other people. That's how you detect an oral poisoning, and that's how you avoid it. I'm sorry, there is really no other solution. I can't tell you to go take a magical pill and you can go out and eat anything that you want anywhere and you're going to be safe, because you're not.
If you think you, you know, maybe you start feeling queasy, or you think you might have something because you did go out to eat at McDonald's or whatever, the point isn't there something you could take?
No, I'm not going to go. That could be a two-hour discussion on itself. Treatment of poisoning and everything else is a two-hour discussion. You would immediately call the poison control hotline, tell them that what you ate, tell them that you're not feeling good, and they're going to tell you to go to the emergency room right away. I missed one of my analogies and principles. I was talking about these horrible viruses and stuff that can challenge humanity, kill 100 million people in a certain amount of months. How do you survive that? If you're in Florida and Hurricane Andrew's coming at you with 180 mile per hour winds, class 5 hurricane, and you're there, how do you survive that hurricane? How do you survive a thing that devastates everything?
You be where it is not.
Okay? You get out of the way. So if there's a smallpox epidemic, if there's an XYZ epidemic, if there's a SARS epidemic, how do you avoid it? If there's a mass poisoning, you be where it's not. And what you need to be where it's not, you need to be away from the infection routes, which is generally other people, or the contaminated food supply, and you need to be able to shut your doors and stay home. And you have to be able to shut your doors and stay home for at least, let's say, a month. 2 weeks? A month? 3 months? Do you see how food storage and preparedness protects you from weapons of mass destruction? Which will be weapons of mass confusion as well. Okay, it's that simple. Oral poisoning. Someone else gets it, you see it, and you don't do what they did. three people jump off out of an airplane with XYZ parachute on their back, and it doesn't open, and you got XYZ on your back. Are you jumping?
Nope.
Okay. We're done with oral and poisoning. Now we're going to go into the air. Now what are we going to talk about with things through the air? We're going to talk about things that go into your skin, okay? Things that will float down through the air, okay? Again, most chemical weapons are not gases. There's a few, okay? They're not really preferred. They'd much rather use the other types. What are they? They're liquids. Many times they got the consistency of motor oil. So what you have is a bunch of microfine droplets coming down, okay? So things coming down out of the air onto your skin of a chemical nature, there's two main classes. Again, I'm not getting into making you memorize all the different classes and what their names are, because it's not going to do you much good. You got things that come down that are nerve agents. You got things that come down that are blister agents. Okay. Now what is a nerve agent would be like VX, sarin, Tobin, GB is one of the other code words for them. They're nerve agents. They disrupt the signals going through your body that makes your central nervous system function. Thus, your breathing, your heart, your respiratory, and everything else that makes you who and what you are. They disrupt them, they shut them down, and you generally die very quickly, usually of suffocation. On the back of a penny, you see the building. It's Lincoln's Monument, I do believe. And the columns there, okay? A droplet, many times smaller than what can fit through those columns, onto your skin means your life is over. They are that strong, okay? Blister agents. So I'm not going to cover this. If you're hit with a nerve agent, you know, forget it. You're dead, okay? Again, be where it's not. Blister agents. Blister agents are mustard gas, lewisite, and other things that were used during World War I and things that we've improved since then. What do these do? These create horrible blistering wounds on the skin and on your lungs, okay? You get a blister agent on you, you're not going to die. You can die. You probably won't. You'll wish you were dead. Okay? Very painful. You immediately flush with water, wash, and get the medical care. There's not much you can do for yourself without me taking you through 20 hours of training. Okay? So, again, blister agents and nerve agents, this one lethal, this one you wish was. Be where it's not. And these are also persistent. Many of these are also persistent, which means after they come down, they stay there, they don't go away. You can come by a month later, get in contact with an exposed surface. It's called persistency. They're a persistent weapon. You touch something that has some VX on it, you're contaminated. You're going to be life challenged very quickly, okay? So stay home where they're not until the government says you can come out. This place has been decontaminated.
Does clothing
help? Against a nerve agent, no.
On a nerve agent, is there something that's in the ear? Does it have a specific radiance, or does it care how far it travels?
It's a micro droplet on the wind.
So it'll make a plume.
From a point source release, it'll make a plume. Okay, and depending upon what the wind looks like, you know, it can travel on that plume anywhere from single digit of miles to tens of miles, depending how it's released. If there's a temperature inversion trapping stuff low to the ground, it'll stay low to the ground if the wind's low, temperature's right. That's why it's hard to do it right, easy to do it poor.
Is that what was used on the Kurds?
Hmm? Yeah, absolutely. So it was used on the Kurds. Very effectively. So, again, for the, how do you detect it? How do you detect a chemical weapon of going onto your skin of a nerve or blister has been released? You see it on the news, you see signs of it, okay? How do you protect against it? Stay indoors. Where's the safest place in your house? If you know you're in an area that you suspect that has a chemical release? No. Second floor, third floor?
Oh, really?
It settles down. You go to your basement for nuclear. You go upstairs for chemical and biological. And again, we'll be covering safe rooms. We'll be covering safe rooms in a bit. But again, I want you to think, you know, if this is air through the air, falling, and onto your skin. Okay? And those are the two things, and that's how you detect and protect. I'm losing my notes here. Let's see. Okay. We're going to talk about through the air. Into the mouth and nose, basically lungs. Okay? Anything coming down through the air, going through your mouth and nose into your lungs. Why do I really not need to address chemical weapons in this realm? Either a blistering agent or a nerve agent. Why do I really not need to discuss chemical agent in respect to this? Because it's going to be very lethal. Okay, if one little droplet I described on your skin is lethal, going into your lungs is going to be even more lethal. Same thing with a blister agent. When a blister agent gets inside, it disrupts the interior functioning of your lungs. You cannot take in air. You cannot take in oxygen into the bloodstream, and it's going to be lethal. So I'm not really going to cover chemicals through the air.
How fast is it lethal?
Seconds.
Seconds?
Tens of seconds, seconds, minutes. For a nerve agent, no. Blister agent, it could be days of agony. So beware, it's not. Now, the things that are really scaring us that most people worry about and they talk about in the news is this subject. It's through the air, biological weapons. And there's two classifications. Okay, there's going to be bacterial and viruses, right? We've discounted chemical. Okay, so we're going to talk about through the air bacterial and through the air viruses. You know, of this, which one is severe acute respiratory syndrome, pneumonia, SARS?
Virus.
Yeah, it's a virus, okay? Do you see the similarity between catching a cold and catching the flu and catching SARS and a biological weapon? They're very similar, aren't they? They're going to come to you through where? Eyes, nose, mouth, cuts in the skin. In the bacterial field, we have one of the public key buzzwords you hear is going to be anthrax. Another highly infectious bacterial organism is Yersinia pestis. That's pneumonic plague. Okay? Pneumonic plague is very infectious, just like I was talking about with SARS. Okay? It's airborne. I can aspirate it. It'll become dry and float around. It can contaminate surfaces. You can bring it in through your eyes, your nose, and mouth. It goes from person to person with a high degree of effectiveness. Okay? Does anthrax... If you catch anthrax, are you likely to give it to me?
No.
No. You when you're dealing with an anthrax patient, you exercise what's called secretion protocols. You don't want their blood, their saliva, or other bodily fluids going onto you. And again, you don't want them on your skin, don't want them on your eyes, nose, mouth. But it is distributed in an airborne format. Principally, anthrax can be used orally. You can get it orally. You can get it through skin lesions, which is where it gets its name. Those are treatable a lot easier. We're talking about it being inhaled into your lungs, like what happened in the post offices. So anthrax, pneumonic plague. You understand it's a particle, right? You understand how it's going to get into you. While we're on plagues, bubonic plague. How does it get to you? Rats. What on rats and mice? Ticks and fleas and bites of the other insect. Okay, that killed one quarter of Europe. Okay, it killed one quarter of Europe. But it's pretty easy for us to control ticks and fleas now with our modern pesticides, and let alone bubonic. This is very easily treatable by our modern antibiotics. I'll cover that. That's a virus. Okay. So bacteriological, things to the air, bacteria. The good news. What's the good news about bacteriological weapons of mass destruction?
Antibiotics.
They're very easily treatable by antibiotics. Let's see. Ones that have not been engineered to be resistant against antibiotics are very easily treated by antibiotics. The anthrax used in the postal system a year and a half ago, even penicillin would have treated it and stopped the infection. So penicillin, doxycycline, tetracycline, ciprofloxacin will all treat these exceedingly well. So, but if you have 50 million people infected from a bacteriological agent, your hospital system is down. Your medical supply system is down. So if you get it and you don't have a supply of antibiotics personally underneath your own control, you won't be able to get the treatment. That's the downside of these. You can overwhelm a medical system with these. So bacteriologicals, that's the good news. Now the viruses. Smallpox, SARS, viral hemorrhagic fever, Ebola, I'll put West Nile here because you asked, but this is not through the air, it's by a bug bite, it's through by a mosquito, okay? Right, so you understand how West Nile gets to you. You get it, it gets to you by a mosquito. And what is a mosquito doing? Again, we're talking routes into the body. A mosquito is making a little wound in your protective layer, in your skin. And it's getting to you that way. You had a cut there, and you had West Nile airborne, and it went onto there. There's a good chance you'd get infected as well. So that's what a mosquito's doing. It's just making a little wound, and it's putting it right into you. Viruses, smallpox, SARS, viral hemorrhagic fever, Ebola. What's the good news for smallpox? Is there any other treatment for it? Is there any antidote? Is there a cure for smallpox? No, there isn't. The vaccina is our only treatment. We have more smallpox vaccine than the population of this country right now. We have many times more done in the can, ready to go, completed. Okay, we have vaccine for everyone in the country a couple times over. They're just beginning to distribute it to healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, and next is emergency services personnel, police, fire, EMS, us people in the civilian emergency response team. Then the public is going to be voluntary vaccinations thereafter.
But they won't take it. The council wants to use it because of heart attacks or.
Well, tell you what. If you understood smallpox, and this was called the scourge of the planet at one time, if you understood smallpox and how lethal it can be, and how fast it can spread from person to person, and how, see, there was a little thing done called Dark Winter. It was a government exercise. It was done. I think it was just before 9/11 or just after 9/11. They did a three-point release where there was 3 points of infection in the United States from a small release, something the size of this jar of water right here, okay, being put out into an airport someplace innocuous. Before they could get it under control, I believe it was 2 million Americans dead from a simple three-point release of garden variety, non-weaponized smallpox. So the vaccine is, you know, it's hard to make recommendations and other things, but me personally, being a healthy male adult with none of the reasons not to get the vaccine, which means I don't have a compromised immune system, I don't have hepatitis, I've not had cancer, I've not had any organ replacements, I don't have eczema, I'm going to get the smallpox vaccine the first chance I can get. If someone's offering it to me tomorrow, I'll take it tomorrow. Your smallpox vaccination as a child is only effective for approximately 5 to 10 years, closer to 5.
So where are you having that? Long gone.
Long gone. We're all smallpox naive.
What I'm concerned about is in other countries, they've already got the small, everybody's been vaccinated already, like in the UK, I think Canada too.
No, Canadians aren't
vaccinated. The clinic can't even get one.
You can? I'll be across the border Monday.
What did you say? Why is someone with eczema at risk and some have a reaction?
Dr. Mayo, can you address that?
No, I saw a patient who had a problem. The child was vaccinated for the rest of that night. His father had eczema. The child went sleeping Father's Day. He got generalized vaccine and died within a week.
Right. If you get the vaccine, you are leaking live virus. The vaccine is a much milder version of the pox itself, of cowpox. Okay. So it's a very mild version of pox, and it's typically cowpox. There's cowpox, monkeypox, camelpox. There's a whole bunch of poxes out there, okay? And so if you have the take, where you're given the inoculation, you will be leaking live virus from there for about 2 to 3 weeks. So if you have these things I just mentioned, you can't come close to someone for a period of time who also has these conditions. Eczema is a skin ailment.
The vaccination covers the whole body.
Yes. So the best thing I can do is, if you are really concerned about smallpox, and I would be scared. Okay, I'd be seriously concerned. I don't like to use the word scared. I'd be seriously concerned. Okay, I would talk with your physician and tell them that you really want it. You're really concerned about it. And despite what your physician says, you want it, and you want your physician to make sure that you are going to be in a very low population for an adverse reaction to it. Okay, which means he's going to make sure you don't have hepatitis, your immune system's not compromised, you don't have AIDS, you have not ever had an organ transplant, you don't have any liver ailments. Okay, if you're a normal, healthy adult, you should say, yeah, you seem to be fine to be able to receive it. And that's fine.
Did you think they were giving
you winter? No, winter, but I heard that on BBC.
Well, believe me, the first thing I'll be doing late this week or early next week is I'll be verifying that.
I don't know if you have to prove you're a citizen or whatever.
You just might have to wait in line for 6 months. I don't know. I will go verify it, okay? But I don't think they're fully immunized.
Is that only going to last for 5 to 10 years?
Yes, it's only going to last 5 to 10 years. And the military used to get it every year. In the military in the 70s and 80s, you used to be re-inoculated almost every year, depending upon who you were and what you were doing, but yes.
Because I thought it was a lifetime thing.
No, it is absolutely positively not lifetime.
It affects our elderly people?
Yes.
So they're not going to be prepared to
be yes.
Okay.
Consult with your doctor.
Okay.
That's the best thing that I can do. Because everyone's different. Everyone's a little bit different in their own little way. And I cannot give blanket medical advice, nor would I try to. I can only try to give some of the principles.
Dropped so dramatically after immunization was started, people became very casual about it.
Yes.
They hadn't seen one for years.
We still haven't.
And as a result, they felt there was no risk. But the death rate is fairly high.
There is no risk to smallpox right now. Any risk we have is due to an intentional release. The only place smallpox survives is in the human. We are the only reservoir for it. So if you eliminate it from the population of humanity, there's no place for it to break out again.
So under what condition would it be really strong, evil person?
Weapon. That's it.
How do they make it? How do they?
They get it. They have it. Either from Russia weaponized vast quantities of it. So did some other countries. It was not only at the freezer in the CDC and at the biopreparate lab in Russia. It was not only in those other two locations.
Epidemics now, are any people coming down with smallpox?
No, no.
Nobody in the world?
No.
With smallpox at this moment?
No, none. The first smallpox case starting right now would be a worldwide, the alarm bells around the world would ring like crazy. It would be a worldwide health alert.
And a lot of people would die because they couldn't immunize people quick enough, right?
The plan is to immunize everyone in the United States in 4 days.
Okay.
And a friend of mine who's a researcher on the subject says, that's playing you bet your country. It's like rolling the dice and saying, the United States exists, the United States doesn't exist. So the more people that get vaccinated earlier, the better. That starts developing what's called herd immunity, community immunities. Every smallpox case, throughout literature, throughout history, throughout the 20th century, throughout the 1900s, 1800s, historically, every smallpox case creates 12 to 14 secondary cases.
Why aren't they giving it to the general population yet?
They've just, through a great deal of lobbying and a great deal of effort, President George Bush, bless him, has just begun allowing hospital workers, first responders to get it. I think, and the people I work with all think it should be made to the public now. It should have been years ago.
The reason it's not is because A, there's risk with it, and B, people say, well,
that's right. Liability.
Medical malpractice. Yes, I don't know if it's exactly very small.
1 to 2 per million.
And the risk of getting it for a long time is far greater than the risk of getting the disease.
That's right.
And therefore, it was determined that this shouldn't be used for that reason.
The numbers are 1 to 2 people per million. 1 to 2 people per million. 250 million people in the United States. That's 500 to 1,000 people dead. That's one-third of the people we lost in the World Trade Center.
And our communication system is such that even 3 or 4 cases creates a national panic and an alert. And you lost track of the relevant.
That's right. Now, I'll give you an example, okay? There's been 3 deaths due to heart failure of people who have had the smallpox vaccination recently, okay? Now, if I go off and I grab 100,000 people right now, okay, to swath through the United States, how many think you're going to? How many of these people you think are going to be dead in the next month of heart disease?
Probably no different from heart disease.
That's right. So if I take a swath of people and I just, I put chalk on their nose, okay, and within a month, 6 of these people are dead of heart disease. Well, you put chalk on his nose. Chalk on his nose must be the cause of the heart disease. Well, it's not. Prove it. So now you're forced to stop what you're doing, stop putting chalk on everyone's nose, and prove that chalk on your nose does not cause heart disease and kill you. And that's what's happening. And that's why we just gridlocked the smallpox vaccination process as of 4/17/2003 today. That's why it just slowed down. That's why some hospitals are saying, no, you're not going to give it to our people. So it's an individual, informed decision between you and your physician.
But can they get it? Do they have it in their offices now? The doctors?
No, not a lot of doctors have it. Some do. The ones doing some of the vaccinations for the hospitals and stuff have it. No, it's not in every doctor's office, unfortunately. I wish it was. It will be, as we go through months from now, it will become more and more prevalent. You'll see something in the newspaper, hopefully, a so-and-so doctor is giving smallpox vaccine or so-and-so complained about something. When I find out, I'll let Lauren know, we'll let everyone else know.
There's one hospital designated on each side of giving the medical personnel.
Okay, we got off a little bit off subject. Al, do people ever pull you off subject in the seminar?
All the time?
I'm sorry. We'll have time for detailed questions. You can ask any question you want right now, okay, but we'll also have detailed question and answer. So, okay, basically, other than vaccine for smallpox, all these things, any virus, there's not much you can do, okay? What's the only thing you can do for a person who has a viral infection?
Treat the symptoms.
Supportive therapy. Perfect, okay? If I have a fever, you try to lower my fever. If I have nasal congestion, you try to reduce my congestion. If I have trouble breathing, you try to help me breathe. If I'm too cold, you try to warm me. Okay, supportive therapy is all you can do. Same thing for a common cold. Just try to make me feel a little bit better, please, okay? Help stop me from my lungs filling up with fluid so I can continue to breathe so I can get past, the disease. And it'll be on the website, guys. Oh, here, Vic.
Thanks.
think I've got SARS?
Yes. Okay. Well, look. What have I just talked about? I talked about routes into the body, an infection, bacterial, virus, okay? Do you think you know, what can you tell me about SARS now, Margaret?
But
don't be aware of it.
Yeah, just don't be aware of it.
Don't travel to Hong Kong.
Yeah. Don't be aware it is, okay? What's going to protect you from SARS? If you think you have to go into an environment, okay, you got to hop on a jet, go get your children in Florida, and drive back here, okay? What are you going to do to protect yourself?
Goggles, and my mask.
Goggles, mask. And gloves. Your own food, your own water. Okay. Does SARS seem a lot less scary now?
Sure. No, I'll tell you what. I come into contact with Chinese people all the time. These relatives are going back and forth. I've got visiting my Chinese friends.
Okay. I can give you some details on SARS. To the best knowledge today, which is April 17th, year 2003, according to the CDC website, the incubation period of SARS is thought to be 2 to 9 days. So you might have it in you for 2 to 9 days before you start becoming symptomatic. It is believed at this time of 4/17/2003 that that's at the very beginning of the mildest symptoms, and the first symptoms are of a fever more than 100.3, generally closer to 103, 104, so really severe fever. A dry, non-productive cough, which means you're not bringing up any phlegm. Basically, no gastrointestinal, no vomiting, little or no diarrhea. A few people have had diarrhea, but it's not the normal. Those are the indications for SARS, okay? So the second you begin having a mild fever, you're thought to be contagious. You're thought to be aspirating saliva and putting the virus out through your saliva. That's why it's so contagious, okay? Smallpox, standard smallpox, before you're infectious, you're lying on your back in agony, okay? You wish you were dead. You have a rash, okay? You have a high fever. That's why you're in agony. You have a rash on your head. You have a rash on your extremities. It's then that you really become infectious with non-weaponized smallpox, okay? That's why there's only 12 to 14 cases off of the index case. That's bad enough, okay? Usually you get smallpox from your friends and family. You're sick. I come to help you, okay? Being in close contact with you with an airborne disease, I get it, okay? I get sick. My mother, my parents come help me. You get smallpox from your friends and family. SARS, you get from being in close proximity over a moderate period of time with someone who's infected. An airline, a jet, in the same hospital room, treating the patient, okay? If I walked into this room, said hello, and walked out, and I had SARS, I probably would not give it to you, okay? If I sneezed on this table, and you went like this and went like this, high probability. If I stood here and spoke to you for 5 minutes at a distance of 3 or 4 feet, okay? Or if we were friendly with each other, there's a high degree of transmissibility as we know it at this time, okay? But other than that, SARS has the same mechanisms we've been talking about here all evening. It's a particle on the air, usually in a moisture droplet, that's going to go into your eyes, nose, mouth, and skin. What's super spreader?
Yeah, they're talking about some people are more contagious than others, right?
I haven't heard about that yet. You know, I heard someone mentioning that you can have it, but not be symptomatic of it, and you can still spread it. I know that in other diseases. I've not heard of it in SARS.
But if it takes 2 to 9 days until you really come, you can actually spread it before you're...
No. It's not thought of at this moment that you're going to be spreading it when you are not symptomatic. Hey, but, you know, how many of us go to work and walk around with a low-grade fever? A fever of 101 puts me on my rear end, okay? I ain't going anywhere. I'm miserable at 101. There's other people who go to work and feel fine with 102. I don't understand that. Their biology is a little different than mine. They can have a fever and they can still function. I can't. Okay.
My son and his wife are living in Toronto right now, which means they can't avoid. He's working at Oakville, so they can't avoid the area. They are there.
Get on the edge of the hurricane. Avoid your daily contact. Avoid the maximum period of contact. If you're going to go into some place that we think you have a high degree of infection possibility, wear a mask and our goggles. And they said, while you're being stupid, take those off. And say, go jump on a lake. Okay? You have to do what you, no matter what's going on, no matter who your doctor is, no matter who you know, who's telling you what, you have to do what you believe is important to yourself and your family. Okay? And you know what? I think it's stupid that you got a smoke detector. You know you got an alpha, an ionizing radiation source in your smoke detector that emits alpha particles? Do you know if you swallowed your smoke detector, you got an increased chance of cancer? I think it's stupid that you got a smoke detector. You should take that thing out right now. Okay? You going to remove your smoke detector? I'm not going to put you on my Christmas card list. You're killing the planet. You're killing yourself. You're hurting your baby because you got an ionizing radiation smoke detector. For the note, I am lying through my teeth, okay? I'm exaggerating. Okay, if someone's listening to this on the web, okay? Ionizing smoke detectors are not harmful to you. Alpha particle can't even go through this piece of paper, let alone through the plastic up there. So, again, you have to do what you think and what you know to be right in your heart, in your faith, in your belief, and in the knowledge you've taken in. You have to do what you know is to be correct for your protection of yourself and your family, no matter what anyone else says. And the hardest thing you're going to do is tell those people telling you that line of BS to go take a hike. And you have to be aggressive about it. I swore after 9/11, you know, I taught civil defense and preparedness and been in the field for 18 years, that any time I saw someone making fun of someone else or saying someone was stupid for being in preparedness and even having a week's worth of food, oh, you're stupid, you're paranoid, nothing's going to happen. I swore I was going to put my foot in their rear end, okay? Because I considered what that person was saying from his uneducated opinion to be harmful and detrimental to the concerns and desires to a person to educate themselves, to make themselves and those they care about safer. So, don't be deterred by what other people are saying. Do what you know is right. And if you don't know, find out. Any other questions?
Can these viruses live on surfaces for very long?
Yes. Yes. Viruses are generally fragile things, okay? Sunlight likes to kill a virus pretty fast. Viricides, antibiotics, disinfectants like to kill viruses pretty easily, okay? There are viruses in the family. The SARS virus is a coronavirus, okay? It's the same family, believed to be the same family as a common cold, as measles and mumps. That coronavirus has a known history of being staying alive on a surface for 2 to 4 hours. Whether SARS does or not is a question, but it is identified at this time, 4/17/2003, as being a coronavirus. And coronaviruses can stay alive on a surface. So if it...
Yes, it
can.
And does everybody that gets smallpox die?
Everyone who gets smallpox will probably die.
What about SARS? No?
SARS has a lethality rate right now of 3.8%. Okay? That 3.8% includes healthy young people like you and me in our 20s and 30s and 40s. Okay? We lose 40,000 people a year to the flu. Okay? 40,000 people dead to the common flu every year in the continental United States on average. Most of them are aged. Most of them have some other type of problem, okay? The problem with SARS is it's not just taking people who are susceptible to disease and have a weakened immune system or some other problem. It's killing a small portion of normal, healthy, young adults and children. That is why SARS is a problem, and the fact that it's communicable. Flu is communicable, okay? But it's survivable by most of us. That's why SARS is scary. And right now, as of this date, it's increasing at a rate of only about 4 to 5% per day. It was, in the United States, going up about 15% per day. it's slowed down. Our communications and medical response has been wonderful.
Lauren? The death rate from smallpox years ago was
30% in a community that has been exposed to smallpox. Okay, none of us has ever lived through a smallpox epidemic. None of us has had it mildly. None of us has had it and survived, okay? All children underneath 1 year of age die of smallpox. Okay, there's 4 to 5 million of those in the United States right now. Okay, they all die. So we're all smallpox naive. And there's going to be no supportive therapy. If we have a large infection, there's not going to be much of the supportive therapy. A lot of people are going to die of respiratory failure.
Therefore, the 30% gets up close to
50, 60.
Smallpox is expected to deal with in the physical worker is different from the natural genetic
area. Nature magazine published an article regarding one of the smallpox families and a modification to the virus. And it was a real simple modification, like I said, that a college-level geneticist could have done. And they published the article to the world, unbeknownst to what they were doing. And it turns off the T-cell immune response to the virus side of everything, which means if you get this version of smallpox, there will be no antiviral response from your body. It's like it doesn't know the infection is there, and it's going to be very rapid, very quick, and basically 100% lethal. So it's a class 5 hurricane. You don't be where it's at. If you see one smallpox case in the United States of America, forget work, okay? Forget going out. Forget the bank. Forget everything, your mortgage. You're staying home. You're shutting the door. And you're watching the TV and the news. You ain't going out. You're stopping everything on the first confirmed reported case by the CDC or the SAMRID medical facility of the Army.
But if we hear about the first case, if the vaccine is there and it's made available, shouldn't we go out and get the vaccine?
As quickly as you can.
So we have to go out of the house?
Yeah, but you're going out to get in line for the vaccine.
Okay, and then coming right back home.
And coming right back home. Okay. It is thought if you receive the vaccine within 3 days of exposure, you might survive, okay? You might. You might. I'll say it's probably a probable. It's probably. Boy, an English teacher would kill me for saying that. But you're going to go out and going to get your vaccine. But being that you already have a month to a year's worth of preparedness at home, and you understand how to stay at home, you are going to be in by far better situation than those of us who are here who are unprepared, who don't even have 3 days worth of food in the house. You're going to have to go to the grocery store, which is going to be, you know, run in the grocery store pretty quickly.
Is the small? You said there's different types of smallpox. That can be genetically engineered or something
or other.
Is the smallpox vaccine that we already have able to address all the different types of possible smallpox?
We hope.
And if we stay home, can it come in through the ventilation system of our house now? Or, I mean, are we really safe at home?
How smallpox spread?
Airborne.
By what mechanism? What's the only reservoir for smallpox? Humans, people.
Okay.
So do you think the likelihood of it coming through your ventilation is, I can't say it's zero, but do you think it's significant?
Unless your neighbor who has it comes and coughs in your...
I want you to leave here with everything between your ears to answer your own questions, okay? Just think about what I spoke about. And the routes and the mechanisms and where it is and how it gets from where it is to you. You should be able to answer all your questions. Like you might ask, well, a gas mask. Well, a full gas mask, military gas mask, protect me from smallpox. Will it?
If you wear 24 hours.
Right? I mean, so you walk into a smallpox environment with your gas mask, you take care of some people and you leave. Did the gas mask protect you from smallpox? Yeah. Sure. What did it do? It protected your eyes, your nose, your mouth, right?
If we don't
get a cut, right? Okay, so you walked in, you spent an hour with me, I'm smallpox infectious, and you left, okay? Now, you didn't get it when you're with me, I guarantee you, right? Now that you left, how can you still get it?
Off your own clothing.
You may be carrying my saliva or other fluids with the virus on it, okay?
You aspirated on it.
That's right. I aspirated on you.
Boy, it's bothering me all this alive.
Viruses propagate in the inside the living cell of the host.
That's true.
Bacteria can live outside the host and can propagate in other cultures.
Yeah, generally viruses actually grow inside of bacteria and can burst out. The virus is many thousand times smaller than the bacteria.
And they change frequently.
Oh, yeah.
The flu strains that happen every year are different from last year.
There's a new vaccine.
There's a new vaccine every year.
And they're guessing, okay, they're guessing at where the vaccine will be completely effective against that flu this year or not.
Well, in SARS, they have said, even though they may have discovered, or may speculate on the family, they said it's a new virus.
And I think it might have mutated already. Generally, which way do things mutate in nature? Do they get more aggressive, or do they get to be more benign and less transmittable?
More aggressive.
No, they generally mutate to become more benign. Most epidemics run their course and work themselves out. Okay. It's the ones that don't mutate to become more benign or actually mutate to become more aggressive is what concerns us. But as the odds go, it's significant odds in favor of when things mutate that they become more benign.
How do these things happen? How do they originate? Just happen?
SARS? Well, let's see. The flu is a great example. Most flus, if I remember my biology right, start with, they go from avian, from birds. In the case of the swine flu and many other diseases that originate in China, they go from birds to pigs. From pigs to birds to humans. Birds are one of the animals that can transmit diseases to humans. Okay? Your cat really can't. Your dog can't really give you a disease. There's always the exception to the rule. I'm saying in general, okay? You can catch a disease from a bird, okay? From bird droppings infecting something, you bring it in. There is a route of infection for certain diseases of a type that's beyond my scope into human beings. It is thought that SARS is either weaponized, engineered, or it came out of the
mutation.
Yeah. It came from a mutation or came out of a pool from the animal world. That is kind of a very generic, with a few things I said in there probably incorrect, answer to your question.
Steve, there's one area that I'm concerned with.
Yes.
And it has to do with fast food.
Yep.
And typhoid.
Typhoid.
All these people that are working in these fast food restaurants, are they checked for typhoid, and they're actually food handlers?
Is typhus, is that the same as TB? No, it's not. No, typhus and TB are not the same thing.
It was a typhoid Mary.
Typhoid Mary, right.
I remember her. And she, a lot of people die because of her.
Right.
If the food is properly cooked,
right,
it will kill the bacteria.
Eat
at home.
Wash your hands. It's right here.
Wash your hands and there shouldn't be any transmission. But it's poor handling and insufficient cooking that causes the problem.
For typhus, yeah.
Well, for several of these organisms.
And what's the test all food care workers get before they work in a food establishment?
TB
is one of them. That's what I'm thinking of.
I never had to test food without testing for anything. Both my kids worked at McDonald's and they didn't test for anything.
Healthcare workers now are required in many places to have TB tests annually, or maybe it's not always annually, but relatively short intervals.
Well, maybe
it's
an uncommon disease.
It is now.
It's supposed to be tested, but in fact, all these people working there, these kids don't get
tested. The best way to handle that is to cook your food at home and make sure it's well cooked. Don't eat anything raw or half raw.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go into the last subject so we can get the question and answer. Some people need to go. Last subject, since we've covered air with bacteria and viruses, we're going to talk about duct tape and plastic. Okay, now that is a very serious subject. Well, it does work. Mm-hmm. We just talked about the barriers here, mm-hmm, of goggles and masks. Duct tape and plastic is a goggle and mask for a room or two within your house. not the whole house. So, if you want to make a room in your house more safe, okay? Okay, you're reducing the level of potential infection into you. It's like for anthrax. It takes about 5,000 spores on average. It's about between 5,000 and 50,000 spores into your lungs in order to give you the infection. Some other diseases are a couple of spores, you know, but some are more and higher. If I build this table into a radiation shelter and I go into it and there's radiation outside, am I still receiving radiation inside the shelter? Yes, I'm still receiving radiation shelter. I'm just receiving a lot less, maybe 250 times less radiation than I'm outside. Safe room is the same same thing. Am I stopping absolutely every bacterial that could possibly get in through this? But I am stopping probably a fair amount, maybe in some cases 100% if it's a slight exposure. In a large situation, maybe you know enough. Okay, it's definitely a great level of protection. Same thing with a safe room in your house. You're going to plastic up part of the room. Now, if you have a room, what are you going to put plastic over and seal with duct tape in your room? The windows. Right, the windows. The vents. You're going to turn off your furnace or your air conditioning so you don't try to force more air into the house. Right. You're going to do your vents. What else are you going to do? We already said windows. Door. You can actually seal the door. Okay. What else in a room would you go to seal? What else is the route of air into the room? Yes, chimney and a fireplace is one, but we're going to pick a room. We're going to pick a room that doesn't have a chimney and fireplace.
If I was in my electrical,
no, you don't need to seal up your electrical outlets. What you do need to seal up, what most people don't realize, is the interface of the wall and the floor, right down here. Pick up the carpet, pull it back off the tacks, and seal with tape down on the interface between the wall and the floor. If you're in a room with a wood floor, you can see through the floor into the basement. Okay, that has to be sealed as well. In my house, in the corner of some rooms, the basement, when the room is dark and the basement light is on, I can see a little bit of light coming through there. So obviously you've got to seal that. Now, what room do you really want to pick in your house to be a safe room?
Upstairs.
Upstairs, right. That's a good answer. What other type of room do you want to pick? What would be your favorite room to pick? Master bedroom. Yep. Now the government says pick the room with the least windows and everything else. You know what? You can pick the room with the most windows if you want, if you understand this. If you don't understand I'm holding up gloves and a mask for people who are listening on the audio. If you don't understand the mechanisms of how it gets into the body, you tell a generally dumb public, tape up a closet and go stand in there for 3 days. But since you understand the mechanisms of how it gets to you, you can pick the room that's most convenient to you, even if it's got the most windows. You're just going to have to use some more tape and plastic and seal up everything. But you want the master bedroom because you got a toilet, you got water, you got a shower, okay? That's a great comfort item. You have a hot bath. So you have plenty of sanitary things. You have a nice place to sleep. You have a TV in your bedroom. Are you sure you can't get excommunicated from a TV in your bedroom?
I don't think so.
Well, maybe without cable. If you don't have cable, okay.
Now, if your bedroom doesn't have what they call a master bedroom with a
like my house,
room.
What would I suggest?
And you have to do the hall, don't you?
Well, what? The hall is not a bad one. You know, that's a good idea. A hall has no interior. You just tape up the door to the other room. So that's not a bad idea. What I would suggest is that you pick the bedroom directly adjacent or across from the bathroom.
Right, and then drape.
Like mine is, and then you drape a tunnel from my house. They're directly. They're directly opposing each other. Here's the bathroom. Here's the bedroom. Here's the bath. You're going to do a little more work, okay? You got to tape up your bathroom. You don't need to tape up the faucets. I have no idea why they tell you that. Now that you understand how things get to you, you can probably ask yourself, how's it going to get to the piping to me? I'm going to tape over the faucets, That's someone who doesn't understand the mechanisms and the principles telling you bad advice. Same thing with a smoke detector. They don't understand the principles and mechanisms, so they're giving you bad advice not to have a smoke detector. So you got tape up and seal the bathroom. Unfortunately, it's got two entrances usually, so you really got to seal it up good. I'd make a plastic tunnel out of plastic sheeting and just tape it between the two and seal up the bedroom. If you took some of your food and water and had a television in your bedroom and had the bathroom, how long do you think you could stay in there halfway comfortably?
A couple days.
It depends how old your children are or how many children you have with you. But a reasonable period.
Huh? Air quality.
Air is a good question. What if you seal it up really tight, right?
Too tight.
You heard about the lady who died in Israel in her safe room, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know what she died of?
Fixation.
Nope. Nope. She had a barbecue going to keep herself warm.
Oh, are you serious?
I'm serious. They said that for the first day, then they stopped saying it. She carbon monoxide herself to death, okay? Mother Nature takes care of itself, I can tell you that.
I was going to mention, though, I lived in Israel, in the Middle East, and all the houses and apartments by law have to have, apartments have a basement, and private houses have to have a special safe room.
Yes.
And the walls are this thick.
Yes.
I call it the American...
Well, the walls are that thick because of the way they do construction.
And the doors, and no, everything, to the safe house. I mean, that thing, and it's got its own air ventilation systems.
Right.
We used to have movies on.
Right, you know someone else who takes civil defense and preparedness seriously, as serious as we should in this country. Yeah. Lauren, you ever been to Switzerland?
Yeah, they have underground in the.
They have shelter in every building, every house by law. They have enough shelter to do the entire population and anyone who's there visiting. Okay.
They also have underground hospitals up in the subway, up the exit, so it's Japan.
I can show you videotapes for hours on Switzerland. So anyways, wait, we were talking about getting too stuffy. Al asked about, you know, if you sealed up too tight. On a normal day like today, it's a little cool, let's say a little warmer, 70, 75 degrees. How much air does the average human being need per minute? You need 3 cubic feet. 3 CFM. Not much, okay? If you take the size of this room, you take 20 feet, you say 25 feet by 20 feet by 8 feet. So 20, 50, 500, 5,000. There's 5,000 cubic feet in this room. You know, divided by the number of people by 3, that's an awful lot of time we can stay in here. You're not going to seal this up perfectly anyways. It's going to be a little bit leaky. You can't, it's going to be very hard to seal it. But you're reducing, you're forcing things that are going to come to you if there was an airborne release or something, okay? You're forcing them to drift down through the air, go down through your chimney, down through your fireplace, make its way through the living room, down the hallway, find the crack in the plastic, and then find into your respiratory system, okay? That's what you're forcing it to do by making a safe room. Now, let's say you are a really good engineer, okay? And you just love duct tape, okay? It's what you get for Christmas. And you seal this room up really tight. And it starts, are you going to start knowing when it gets stuffy in there? Are you going to start knowing physically when the oxygen level gets lower and the carbon dioxide level goes up?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you humans do when that happens? They open the, they go for some fresh air, okay? It's going to be hard, you know, to suffocate yourself. You will know very clearly if you're taped up too good. So you'd open up a little bit of an airspace going out into your hallway or something, okay? Maybe you'd go put, let's say this is your hallway we're talking about. Maybe you'd go hang some plastic down here and keep this open a bit, and that would force anything coming into your house to actually come down, go through the crack in the hallway, make it all the way down the hallway, all the way into your room, okay? That's what you would do. If it gets stuffy, just think. You understand this, okay? Mm-hmm. Your safe room is an extension of this. Okay, if it becomes too stuffy, you know what you'll do. You just put more barriers. Now, so if you're in your safe room, you're wearing this, are you more protected?
Yeah.
It's got to make its way through your chimney, through the living room, down the hallway, through the crack in the plastic, and then go through this before it gets to you.
So all we need is someone else, my person, to come up with some sort of an application for an air conditioner
What you are saying is you need someone. What you're saying is you need someone to do the stuff for you because you don't want to understand this. There are whole house HEPA filters that you can do that with, and it's fairly expensive, and then you got to have the right type of filter, and they have to be maintained, and they have to be changed, and they're expensive, and it's not worth the cost in general. If you understand these concepts, you'll be able to protect yourself when necessary.
So, okay, I'm not going to do this right now because I don't think it's necessary.
No, it's fine. As long as you don't think it's necessary, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so
don't let me stop you.
I'm not going to run home, and I'm not going to pick up, take all over my house, and I'm not going to go live in my bathroom in my bedroom. At what point, when they come out and say, okay, we've been attacked, that's when I'm going to do it.
Yeah. If it's on the news, then they say, an F-16 out of Selfridge Air National Guard base just blew up an airplane over Detroit that was trailing something out of the end of it. It's too late to run to Home Depot. It's too late to run to Home Depot.
The point is not to do it now. The point is you better have some duct tape.
Yeah. Well, what have we talked about with half our stuff? Two questions I always ask at the end of everything. How do you detect it, right? People falling over dead, okay? Or, like I said, breaking news, Channel 4, Selfridge F-16 blows up a plane and splashes it into the middle of Detroit trailing the vapor. Believe me, you will probably know, okay? You will be standing there at the TV like this, and you will probably know when it is to, tape up your room.
I have a comment here and a question, and that is if the power, we have a power failure. Okay, we need to have obviously a radio with batteries.
What type of batteries?
Tell me.
D cell alkaline.
D cell.
The biggest alkaline battery, okay? Make sure all your radios have those. So I'm sorry, please continue.
Okay. Because I went through this actually in Texas when they were going to, during the last cell tour, we actually were sealed up, and they thought Texas Instruments was going to be. We didn't know what, but everybody, actually in Texas, they actually have the gas mask too.
Yep,
but,
okay.
But the thing is, if the power goes off in the summertime, which we're heading towards, we won't have air conditioning and we won't have the television.
And I won't have water.
And she won't have water.
We gotta have lots of water in there. But the point is, it can get very hot in a sealed up room.
Yeah.
Texas in the summer was like 120 degrees.
I'm saying the top floor.
Yeah.
So
you gotta have a lot of water, don't you?
You can sit in your bathtub.
You think you gotta have, on average, you gotta have 1 gallon a day per person. That's if it's not too cold or not too hot. In Arizona, you might need to have 3 or 4 gallons of water per person.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing everyone does not have enough of, usually in preparedness, is you don't have enough water. Questions?
I think we all know, but the kind of plastic, is there
good question. What type of
thickness of plastic?
Good. The gentleman's asking what type of plastic or what thickness of plastic. Almost any thickness of any type of plastic will work as a great and good enough barrier for protecting yourself against biological organisms and most chemical things. Some people say, well, technically the plastic's permeable to certain chemical vapor. Yeah, that's if your house gets, dumped on right above you. Okay, so if you go to Home Depot and all you see is 0.8 mil painter's plastic, which is the cheapest, thinnest plastic, great stuff. I'd rather, there's 1 mil, 2 mil, 4 mil, 6 mil plastic. If you really want to spend the extra money and get 4 mil plastic for your windows and your doors, great. It's a little bit more durable and a little thicker. And at the same time, if you buy $20 of 4 mil plastic, you want to spend an extra $10 and get 3 times the volume of painter's plastic, please do so. Plastic is a miracle substance. There's no end of things that you can use plastic to make things, hold things, cover things, wrap things, protect things with. It is a wonderful thing for you to have, an abundance of plastic. Plastic bags, plastic sheeting, plastic tape. I can make a waterproof rain slicker for you out of plastic, a plastic bag in about 30 seconds. There's just no end of things. It's a tool of what you can use it for. The lady asked a good question about, since we're talking about weapons of mass destruction, I really didn't go through nuclear. Do you know what kills most people? You know, if there was a nuclear attack, you know, mushroom cloud over Detroit and everything, or there's a large biological chemical attack, you know what kills, really probably kills most people? No? No? Lack of infrastructure. The power grid goes down.
Oh, yeah.
No power, no heat, no air conditioning, no water flow, no sewage, no refrigeration, no illumination, no security systems, no communications with law enforcement, no anything, okay? Any city is 3 days away from a riot after 3 days of no power. Any city, okay? Most people don't have 3 days of the food. What do you do? You're there, your child is screaming, is hungry, you have no water, you're thirsty, your wife's thirsty, your child's got diarrhea, there's no food for him. After 3 days, okay, and someone else has it, you'll probably go get it from them. Okay? What kills most people after a hurricane, after an earthquake, and anything else is not the buildings falling on you, not the high winds, it's the lack of the infrastructure. We can only exist where we are now because of the benefits of our power system. And principally what that is the system that allows us to move fresh water in and take sewage out. You start drinking, what kills more people around the world than anything else is contaminated water. They're starting to have cholera in Baghdad right now because they're drinking out of tigers because they don't have water. Cholera is epidemic. And it can kill you, me, in a half a day. From vomiting and explosive diarrhea. You'll dehydrate yourself quickly.
For somebody who uses incubators with all kinds of wonderful things.
The incubator won't help you for cholera.
No. They looted, went into some lab and took...
Yeah, they took everything.
Yeah.
They took
it. Yeah, cholera and a bunch of other vials of wonderful things.
Well, that's not the cholera exists in nature plentiful enough, okay? If you're in a situation where there's no clean water, no sewage, cholera will become epidemic. It's in Mother Nature. So that's what gets most people. And so you got to have your own source of clean water, your own source of food, your own ways of purifying water, which is a whole different subject and can take 20 hours on its own. But we addressed a lot of this in the preparedness fair that we had. On my website, stephenharris.net, there is a large audio file when Margaret and the entire relief community came over to my house. It's 18 megabytes, 3 hours long, and we covered water purification, food storage, types of food storage, energy. We covered a whole bunch of stuff. And it's there for you to listen to it, just as if you were Margaret coming over to my house and you were talking. There's some photos up there from the preparedness seminar. There's the previous audio file from the last Weapons of Mass Destruction class I gave. This class will be up there in audio format for you to listen to. So we're trying to provide a great deal of information, not just for you, but everyone else who's going to come and listen to this and get the benefit. You might have to listen to a little bit of extra audio because I didn't edit it. It's just the raw conversation with myself and Margaret and her wonderful ladies and all the questions that she was asking. But it's there.
You just have the only copy of it, or is that?
You can get it, burn it to CD, and copy the tape. And
If all things were being equal and you're well prepared no matter where you live,
uh-huh.
You know, because you know more stuff.
Uh-huh. You understand. You understand the principles, right?
Yeah. Okay. There obviously are some places in the United States, for instance, we're not going to talk about outside the United States, but just in the United States that are safer than other places. Do you have an opinion on what places that might be? Or what places aren't safe? Let's say
you're safe wherever you're standing, as long as you understand the principles and understanding of it. You can't let fear dictate your actions and what you must do. You must do what you feel you have to do to protect your family and your friends, no matter where you are. If you isolate yourself, you let the forces of evil, you let the enemies, the fear propagators, win the battle, and I refuse to let them win the battle. If that was true, I would say, heck with all you guys, and I'd move someplace where there was just me and two bears, okay? And something soft, warm, and female with me, okay? If that's all I would do. But I don't, okay? I'm not going to give in to it. I'm not going to be scared. It's like a good friend of mine, Jim Phillips, he has a bunch of analogies, one of which is luck. Do you know what luck is? laboring under correct knowledge. That's luck, okay? And that's what we're going to do. There's a wonderful saying, a thing I love. It says, if you are prepared, you shall not fear. And preparedness is not what you have, it's what you have between here. The most important thing that you can leave here with today that will keep you prepared and help you in your preparedness and help keep you safe, the most important thing, if you leave here with anything, leave here with this. The most important thing you can have is faith. It's not just faith in God. That's very important, but you all have that. It's faith in yourself. Faith in your family. Faith in your neighbors, in your friends, in your community. Faith and understanding that when things get tough, it's going to bring out the best of people and not the worst of people. There will be some challenges. There will be obstacles. There will be heartbreak. But if you have faith in yourself, faith in your belief, and faith in others, and you help others and let them help you, we will all get through whatever obstacle comes towards us, and we'll all be stronger for it, and we'll all survive and succeed and go on to thrive and be even more happy. It's not just coming to a seminar like this. So many people say, oh, I'm not going to tell anyone about my food storage. Tell them about your food storage. Show them your food storage. And when they say, oh, gee, I'm going to come over here in a disaster. Sure, come on over. You're welcome. You're more than welcome to come over to my place in a disaster. But you know what? I'd rather show you what I did because this is so simple. And for you to have a little bit of this at your house as well as here, and that way both you and I are even better prepared. And I'll show you how to do this. This is really simple. And most people respond very favorably to that. My next thought, as I was rolling so good, just slipped my mind. But the strength is in the community. Strength is in the people. People are not the detriment, they're the asset. You have one neighbor who is a doctor. You have another neighbor who is a nurse. You have another neighbor who is a carpenter. You have another neighbor who has a backhoe. You have another neighbor who knows how to run heavy equipment. You have another neighbor who, you know, there is strength in people. Everyone has different talents. Everyone has something to bring to the group. Even if it's just hard work and determination, most people have something to come to the group. So you're stronger with yourself and your neighbors and those around you and those in your church and those in your community than you are in trying to isolate yourself. If you have lawyers for your neighbor, you let them test your water. But please, if you walk away, please remember the principles that we're talking about. And when a question comes into your mind due to a recent news event, think about the principles that we talked about of how infection gets to you and how you put barriers between yourself. And you'll be able to answer your own question. Have faith in yourself and your neighbors and always try to do the best that you can do. And we will all come through whatever obstacles that are in front of us without fear, and we'll come through with flying colors. So thank you very much. We'll take questions later privately.
Thanks, Steve, for being part of that very important knowledge, Steve.